Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 160 million women and baby girls, females, globally, are missing from China, India, Armenia, all over Asia. Sex selection, choosing boys through abortion and infanticide, has been spreading for 30 years, experts say, and it's now skewing gender ratios toward males in a big way. They will grow up and want wives that won't be there, grow up and shape their societies. What will those societies look like? This hour, On Point, choosing boys over girls and what that may mean for the future. You can join the conversation. What grabs you here? The moral issues, the social issues, and what do you expect from male-heavy societies? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York City is Mara Vistendahl. She's the Beijing-based correspondent for Science Magazine, covering foreign policy and science there. Her new book is Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. Mara Vistendahl, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
What's nature's ratio, and what's the ratio we're getting in some of these countries?
Well, our natural sex ratio at birth is 105 boys for every 100 girls. That actually makes up for the fact that boys are more likely to die at higher rates later on. But across Asia now, we're looking at ratios of close to 120 boys for every 100 girls. So that's a huge gap.
Boys likely to die later on, you're saying, from behavior, you write, riding motorcycles without a helmet, or smoking, or risk-taking, or military service, all the things that historically might have ended up at reproductive age, more or less balancing the gender population.
Sure. What we know is that that ratio does balance out over time. Mm-hmm. But now we're seeing a very unnatural imbalance in Asia and also parts of Eastern Europe.
How do you get to 120 boys to every 100 girls if nature would only create 105 to 100 girls?
Well, this is mostly the result of sex-selective abortion. You mentioned infanticide, and that's actually only a small part of the problem. When women get pregnant, they go in for ultrasound scans, and if the fetus turns out to be female, they get an abortion.
China is the biggest country for this. India's in there as well. I think that sex selection is exactly as you described, is illegal in both countries. So how does it happen?
That's right. Yes, both sex determination and sex selective abortion are illegal in China and India, also South Korea, where it's happened. But those laws just aren't enforced, unfortunately. And what has happened is, as these countries have developed, their birth rates have fallen. In China, that happened with the one-child policy. In other countries, population control played a role, or the birth rate fell more naturally. And so women have a desire to have at least one son. And if you're only having one or two children, the chance that one of those will be a boy without turning to technology are very slim.
I'm looking at here a report from The Lancet, the medical journal, saying that in India, about 600,000 girls are purposely aborted per year. I don't know the number for China, but these are very big numbers. And you're not talking about a marginal change in the balance of genders here. When you go from 105 boys to 100 girls to 120 boys to 100 girls, that is a very significant demographic shift, is it not?
That's right. And you can see that imbalance if you visit schools in parts of eastern China, for example. You can just see many, many more boys and girls. It's very evident. And it doesn't happen in the whole country. It doesn't happen in all of India yet. But in the areas where sex selection does occur, it's very obvious.
I'm looking down a population fact sheet here at countries around the world. It's there. It's in the Balkans. I mean, you've got and beyond in Armenia, the Caucasus. In Armenia, you've got 120 men to 100 women. Albania, 111 male to female. China, 121, the highest in the world, male to female. Georgia, the former Soviet Republic, 118. India, 112, not as high as China, but still very high. Vietnam, 111. The USA is pretty much right on the button, 104.6 male to female. That's pretty much nature's formula. But these are just eye-popping numbers in these other countries. Is this recognized as a problem by the leaders of these countries?
Yes, governments are worried about the problem because it's having all sorts of social effects as these what demographers call surplus males grow up. The men are not able to find wives, and they are buying women from other countries. Sex trafficking is on the rise across Asia. Prostitution as well. There's some evidence that crime and unrest have increased, and governments are worried. But we have to remember that these countries are also developing very quickly. So the major priority of their governments is on economic growth. And to some degree, enforcing the bans on sex selection tends to fall by the wayside.
It's unbelievable numbers. Why is it happening? Why is it so important to these families to have male babies? So important that they're willing to, you know, see it's a female and abort. Or also, you know, there's plenty of stories of at birth realizing it's sex and letting it die. Why?
Well, again, I actually don't. Infanticide is not a very large part of the story. It's mostly sex selective abortion, and the desire for males, you know, desire for at least one son is unfortunately pretty universal. So in most cultures around the world, parents tell researchers that they would like at least one boy, and that was even true in the United States until the 1970s. What has happened, though, is that the fertility rate in countries like Armenia, India, Vietnam, China, it's fallen very rapidly.
Because of government policy? I mean, China had its one-child policy.
In some of these countries had some form of population control over the past 40 years. Other countries, the birth rate just has fallen more naturally. Mm-hmm. So as countries develop, women tend to have fewer children. Mm-hmm. But the other factor is that abortion is relatively common and available. And, you know, there are many parts of the world still where it's not. But in the countries where sex selection occurs, abortion's pretty common.
And the combination of ultrasound technology and abortion, I guess, is the technological combo formula that makes this very widespread practice possible.
That's right. Yeah. Also, as countries develop, the ultrasound comes in. New medical technology. More women give birth in hospitals. More women get ultrasound scans when they're pregnant. And one thing that's interesting is if you look within these countries, the sex ratio at birth is actually more skewed among educated women. So in India, women with a high school education or higher are much more likely to abort a female fetus than illiterate women. And that's a little bit counterintuitive. That's not what many scholars. Well, these are the people who have access to technology. These are the groups where the birth rate's fallen most rapidly. Poor, uneducated women, on average, are still having more children. And this is worrying as well because it means that gender imbalance could kind of trickle down to other parts of society.
Therefore become even more widespread.
That's right, yeah. With the new technology, you know, educated people tend to adopt it first. I mean, if you look at MP3 players or cell phones, that's what happens. And so, you know, then other people pick it up later on.
This has really picked up in volume, scale, spread in the last couple decades. When are we going to see these demographic bulges moving into adulthood and reproductive years? Or is it happening already, Mara?
It is happening already in some countries, in particularly in Taiwan and Korea. These are countries that where people selected for sex starting in the early 80s. The first generation of kind of surplus men, they're called, they've grown up. It's starting to happen in China and India as well. Also, many men there who can't find wives. You know, not all men want wives, but for those who do, they're having trouble finding them. And then in other countries and in also the poorer parts of China and India, this is only just starting to hit. So we'll see more problems in the next 10 to 20 years.
You've got the ethical issues even before birth, but then you get the full-blown social issues when you get these very male-heavy societies. I want to look at that in some detail, but broad stroke, what does it mean to have a society that's got many more men than women? Does it produce a different kind of society?
It is affecting every layer of society. I mean, there's some really unexpected effects. The first thing is, you know, this kind of scramble for women, and that's had a major impact on women's rights in Asia. So men in Taiwan, for example, are going on these so-called marriage tours, where they pay around $10,000, and that covers a flight to Vietnam, room and board, and a wife. So they arrive in Ho Chi Minh City, and the women are paraded before them, and they kind of pick one and take her back to Taiwan.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about cultures, big cultures, China, India, more, choosing boys over girls, skewing their populations male in very significant ways, and what that may mean for the world. Mara Vistendahl has written a terrific book out of China, but looking well beyond as well. It's called Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. You can see an excerpt from her new book at our website, onpointradio.com. She's the Beijing-based correspondent for Science Magazine, joining us today from New York. You can join the conversation. Have you seen the numbers? Nature would say 105 boys to 100 girls, and it will even out as boys behave recklessly and go to war. Now we're seeing 120, 121 boys to girls, males to females. Have you seen those numbers? In China, far more baby boys than girls. Armenia, Vietnam, India, all boy-heavy. What's your instinctive reaction to this, your moral reaction to this, and what happens when all these kids grow up? What will man-heavy countries be like? The Wild West? Sparta? What are we getting into here? Mara, I've got a lot of response online already. Joni says, wow, too many men. A whole class of family-free or wifeless warriors, she asks. Another here on the website from Sikavastani says it's going to mean more wars when all these boys are single, angry, and poor 20-somethings. It's a statistical inevitability. Is it, Mara? What does it mean? What does history show us about male-heavy nations?
Well, evidence from history isn't great. We you know, in America's history, we have the Wild West, where it wasn't this land of kind of romantic cowboys. The murder rate was very high. Crime was rampant. And reformers at the time actually focused on bringing in women. It didn't work, but there was one woman named Eliza Farnham who got the idea to try to ship in women from the East.
You remind us, Nevada had 320 men for every 100 women, Idaho 433, Western Kansas 768 men for every woman.
Right, and some historians say that's actually the reason for America's violent culture today, for our school shootings, our high murder rate. But today, of course, shipping in women is not a solution. We do know that unmarried men are responsible for more crime and more violence than married men. It has been made that the argument has been made that this is a security issue for the United States. Honestly, I think the reason we should care about this is because it's a major issue for Chinese and Indian societies, and because it's causing all sorts of international human rights abuses, like sex trafficking, like bride buying.
Bride buying. That's international. What about within China? What's happening there? I mean, boys must grow up now knowing that it's going to be tough to find that mate. How does it change social behavior?
Well, you know, this is really just the tip of the iceberg now. So men today are buying women still from poorer parts of China. And, it's very sad. And the women are often kidnapped, trafficked. In some cases, they are girls. So, to some degree, men today can marry younger women. Sooner or later, the supply of women will dry up, more or less. There is some evidence that crime rates have increased in provinces in China, where the sex ratio at birth spiked earlier. So economists have done a study looking at those provinces and then correlating the sex ratio at birth with the crime rate, and they found there's a connection.
Mara Vistendahl, please stand by. Mara's new book is Unnatural Selection, looking at this choosing of boys over girls and its consequences. She quotes a very prominent demographer in the book, Christophe Guillemoteau, French demographer who's worked all over the world, in Asia in particular. He's senior fellow in demography at the Institute of Development Research, author of Sex Ratio at Birth, and has paid a lot of attention here, talking about the growing female deficit in Asia. Christophe Guillemoteau joins us right now from Paris. Mr. Guillemoteau, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. My pleasure to be with you.
As a demographer, do you see this as a very serious problem?
Well, I'd say it's firstly an entirely new issue for demographers, because we've never seen that before. We've seen isolated cases of surplus men, but that was only temporary, whereas now it's the first time that we have a situation that concerns many countries, the largest countries in the world, and at a scale that we have absolutely no evidence of anything of that extent in the past. So yes, it is serious, but we have little clue, because we've never seen that before.
Do you see traditional culture driving this, or new technologies, new economics, new dynamics?
Well, everything gets a bit mixed up here, because of course, without the new technology, there would be no prenatal sex selection. That goes without saying. But the most important factor is the fact that a lot of people in Asian society insist on having boys, because the technology is also available elsewhere, say in the U.S. or in Europe, but nobody would make use of it because nobody cares so much about the sex of their children to the extent that they would abort female or male fetuses. Nobody wants to do that. But in Asia, it's really a serious constraint for families. They have to have a son. And they're ready to, and at the same time, they don't want to have too many children. So they don't want to take chance. They don't want to risk remaining sonless. And they have a feeling that it's not their decision. It's just because the social system is such, the kinship system is such that they do have to give birth to a son. So, yes, culture is very much there, and it may not be related to religion or to nationality. It's more cultural traditions, which you find them, for instance, across borders, That's why countries in the Caucasus that may be different have the same sex ratio, or very, very skewed sex ratios at birth. You find it in China, but also in Vietnam, or especially in North Vietnam. You find it in India, and most probably in Pakistan, even if we don't have many statistics about that country. So it's more a matter of cultural attitude, and that's why it's very worrisome, because it's not going to change overnight.
Well, but let me ask you, you're a demographer, a big one. Is this sustainable? I mean, here's China, 121 males to females sex ratio at birth, 121. It would naturally be 105. Can that go on perpetually? Do you see this as a temporary phenomenon? It's already been around for some years. How long can it go?
Well, you're right. It's simply not sustainable. At the beginning, people didn't really realize that, and they thought it would be just a curiosity, like in a way it was in South Korea, because now sex ratio at birth is back to normal, to normalcy. But elsewhere, in China or in India especially, where the phenomenon has been observed for more than two decades now, it's simply not possible. Social systems, and especially the marriage system or the family system, will have to evolve just because people who insist on having sons will insist also on their sons getting married, but that's not going to happen for some of them. So we don't know in which direction changes will come, whether it will be migration or new forms of marriage, but the social system will have to change pretty fast to adjust to the demographic reality.
Christophe Guillemot, please stand by there in Paris, and Mara Vistendahl in New York. We've got a lot of listeners calling in with response to this and writing in online. Amy says, sexism kills. Of course, it gets complicated and it gets large scale here. Jennifer in Belmont, Massachusetts. Jennifer, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling regarding a book called Bare Branches. It's by Valerie Hudson. I don't know if your guest has read it or not, but what she says is that the skewed male-female ratio in Asia and India is really problematic, because it will eventually lead to civil unrest. And possibly even global unrest if, these countries are pushed to go to war to kind of get rid of the excess population. She says that men, she has studies to show that when men get married, their level of testosterone actually drops, and that when they stay single, it just keeps getting higher and higher, and that the men who don't get married tend to be the fringe of society, lower income.
Jennifer, have you seen this firsthand? Do you have experience of this?
I lived over in China for a couple of years, and I did see that there were a lot of men who didn't really know what to do with themselves. They kind of got involved in bad things, and it is worrisome for me, especially for a government who may somewhere down the road have this huge population of high testosterone males involved in crime on their own front. I don't know, would it cause them to maybe be a little bit more, be aggravated by something else globally and be more likely to send all of these males to war to fight for them? I'm not sure, but I do think it's something to take a look at.
Jennifer, I appreciate your call very much, and let me get one more right here if I may. Mark in Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I actually had two questions. First, I wondered why feminism doesn't seem to take this issue up as more of a priority. And my second question was, is there any evidence for some sort of a relationship with different religions?
In the sex selection and the use of abortion to get to it, you mean, Mark?
Yeah, correct. If I recall, if you look at a country like India, for example, some states like Kerala have a completely balanced sex ratio, while most of the rest of India displays this phenomenon. And I wondered, you know.
And Kerala, of course, more Christian than some of the rest of India. We'll look at that. We'll look at both. I appreciate your call. Maura, let me come to you first. I mean, you would think for a feminist, the sort of suppression of the female population would be a fundamental issue. At the same time, here's abortion right in the middle of it. That's politically fraught in many countries, including this one. How do you look at that intersection?
Right. It is a tricky issue for women's groups because of the link to abortion, and in particular because of the way abortion has been framed in the U.S. Around this right to choose. And, when something like sex selective abortion raises this question of, well, does a woman have the right to choose the sex of her baby? So that's very tricky. Actually, feminist groups in India, Korea, Taiwan, they've been working on these issues for years. They're not so afraid to touch them. But here in the U.S., there are relatively few groups that have taken a stance on the issue internationally as well. It's just it's tricky abortion politics.
But my goodness, I mean, we're talking about lots and lots of girls never even being born here. And what about Mark's question on culture as it applies to religion? What do you see in your wide reporting on this? Does that factor into the readiness of a particular culture or subculture to sex select?
No, it really crosses religious lines. And I know Christoph Gilmoto has looked at this as well, but religion doesn't seem to play a role.
Christoph, what about our caller Jennifer? She worries about war down the road as an outcome of gender imbalanced societies. Does that sound overblown as a fear to you or realistic?
Well, I'm probably not that pessimistic because I think that social systems will evolve, and we have seen countries in which men cannot marry, especially in Europe, and this is not such a big deal. So there might be some amount of social unrest, and probably, but I don't think that war would be a natural outcome of the surplus of men.
So what consequences do you anticipate when we get up to 121 male-to-female ratio at birth?
Well, there are some positive and some negative possibilities. For instance, in China, it has been already observed that men, because women are getting scarce, have to work more, to study more before they can marry. So in a way, very indirectly, it's quite positive for the economy in terms, for example, of saving rates. Now, the negative aspects are of course, many, and Mara has documented many of them, like human trafficking, for instance. But more than that, I think that the family structure is going to suffer because there are great expectations placed in sons today in these patriarchal societies we're talking about in South Asia and East Asia. And men are not going to fulfill them. I mean, some of them, and especially poor men who cannot afford, who won't be able to afford a wife. So there will be a lot of frustration also about the institution of the family, which is at the center of social life. So this, to me, is the most serious threat from the collapse of normal sex ratios.
Christoph Gilmoto, senior fellow at the Institute of Development Research, joining us today from Paris, author of Watering the Neighbor's Garden, The Growing Female Deficit in Asia. Mr. Gilmoto, thank you very much for joining us today.
Bye, Tom.
Mara Vistendahl, author of Unnatural Selection. Please stand by there in New York. Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. Listeners, what are we getting into here? What do you think? To see abortion applied on a mass scale in this way for this purpose, who's going to mate up with all these men? And do you understand the fear of coming sex trafficking, abuse, violence in the demographic imbalance? Behind me here, Sleep My Baby. It's traditional music from Armenia, where the birth ratio is now 120 males to 100 females. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about cultures, big cultures, China, India, more choosing boys over girls, skewing their populations male, and what that may mean for the world. Mara Vistendahl is with us. She's Beijing-based correspondent for Science Magazine and author of the very arresting new book. It's called Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. There's an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. More, there are examples here of governments trying to push back on this. I'm reading here in Fujian province in China. Couples who have only two girls would get a $150 annual pension for life, no small thing in some areas there, along with privileged access to health care and employment and housing. Their daughters would be educated for free. And even that, apparently, Mara, not enough. I mean, it seems like the pressures to have the boy must be so incredibly high. Why so high in China?
Well, yeah, there are these programs in China and India to incentivize girls, essentially, to pay parents for having girls. They have been shown to have some effect. I think they don't work on the whole because these are wealthy people for the moment who are selecting in some parts of China and India, or middle class. We really have to kind of wait and see a bit longer to see whether such incentive programs work.
Let's go to Ideed calling from Boston. Ideed, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
First-time caller.
Great to have you.
Thank you. Tom, I grew up in India, Western India. Now, I remember as a child, I used to read a lot of commercials saying that abortion for only 150 rupees. Now, looking back, I remember the main reason was that the girls were looked at as a liability because girls' parents were required to pay a huge amount of dowry to get their daughters married. But now it is banned. It's not there anymore. However, like with people being more and more affluent now, having more money there, so the international trips, one of the main reasons for people to travel overseas, and when people travel overseas, abortions are still pursued.
So you're saying the abortions are banned, but presumably, Adid, the dowry tradition goes on.
And it will never go away. That's what I see as a very big driving force behind abortions in India, especially at least the part that I come from in India.
So, but what about a sort of simple ethical or moral revulsion, Ideed, at the idea of aborting a child just because it's one gender or the other, doesn't that restrain people, in your experience?
It's not, because I think the financial factor is more pressing than the moral factor. That's what because it's like it's a situation between haves and have-nots.
Wow, Ideed, I really appreciate your call. Mara, you've looked at this dowry issue in India, and it is a large financial near requirement of families that pay it when their daughters are married. Here's Ideed reporting that it drives that decision right down even before birth.
Well, again, if you look at where the sex ratio at birth is more skewed, it's wealthy parts of India. It's in Delhi, actually, the wealthier neighborhoods in Delhi have the most boys.
But there are dowries paid even there, right?
That's right, yeah, sure. Dowries are skyrocketing across India. And people do cite the economic reasons as a factor, but, you know, on the other hand, you have to interrogate, well, if people are middle class or wealthy, then, you know, how significant is that pressure? But it's interesting that you cite the abortion ads that you saw on TV.
150 rupees for abortion, yeah.
Yeah, the story of abortion in Asia is very different from that in the U.S., and I think it's important to remember that there's a different context surrounding it. In the U.S., a woman seeking an abortion may have to brave picket lines. There may not be a clinic in her town. And in parts of Asia, abortion's been used as population control. You know, it was legalized in India not as a woman's right, but really as a way to control the population. And we are seeing today a bit of that legacy.
How has it left you feeling about abortion?
Well, I am pro-abortion rights. I was when I started the book, and I am now. I did come to an understanding of this very different context. Quite the same in China as well. Abortion ads on primetime television. But, you know, again and again also, I was dismayed by how U.S. abortion politics have come to bear on Asia. So we talked
in a positive or negative way.
In a negative way,
I
think they've prevented any real action on the gender imbalance. So we talked earlier.
But I thought U.S. had tried to put restriction on its foreign aid tied to abortion. I thought that was a major piece of the U.S. impact globally.
That's right, and that's a unfortunate impact.
Why, if Americans have tried to constrain abortion tied to their own foreign aid, that would seem to be putting a brake on this kind of sex selection in the womb.
Well, no, that actually hurts reproductive rights in much of the world. Then women who do want abortions for reasons that do not involve the fetus's sex can't get them in many countries. But what's happened is that the U.S. groups have not worked on this issue. So the left is reluctant to get into abortion politics. And the right, there's actually quite an active anti-sex selection movement on the the Christian right. But their movement's not about improving the status of women or increasing the number of women in the world. And it's much more about using sex selection as a way to establish a precedent for a fetus being a life. So these groups are actually pushing through bans on sex selective abortion in the United States.
But whatever you think about abortion itself, this is a very, very large scale. Surely it makes people uneasy. And then there's the question not only of those lives that never happen, that 160 million missing females, but the consequences for women in a society like that. Here's Laura writing to us online, Amara. She says, my biggest concern is how the women who are not being aborted will be treated, with young girls and women being used for sex slavery. I wonder if they'll be hunted in a more predatorial way than they already are. What do you say, Mara?
That's a good question. I did in the book, I featured a story of a young Vietnamese girl who was, she's 15, and had met what she thought was a boy online in a chat room, and made a time to meet with him. And she showed up for this meeting, and she was kidnapped, trafficked across the border to China, kept in a brothel there, and made to sleep with over a dozen men a day, horrible conditions. Eventually she was rescued, but when she returned to Vietnam, they discovered she had HIV. And there are really tragic stories like these. Also, bought brides who are abused by their husbands.
Well, Mary Grace is calling from Wolftown, Virginia. Mary Grace, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure. Thanks, Tom. I'm a pro-life feminist, so I have a different take on it. I definitely oppose sex-selected gender.
Are you there, Mary Grace? Sounds like we may have lost Mary Grace there. Let's go to Carol in Wenham, Massachusetts. Carol, hi. Thanks, Meryl. Carol, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
A lot of my point was covered by Adid. I didn't feel that you could have a conversation about gender selection in India without talking about dowry, because it truly bankrupts middle class and affluent families if they have daughters and no sons, so that they're always on the giving and not receiving end of the dowry. I have a daughter who worked for a year in legal services in India and saw kind of the other end of that problem, which is the bride burning and the suspicious kitchen accidents for husbands wanting to, and husbands' families wanting additional dowry from what they've already gotten. And it was so bad in her province that they changed the presumption of innocence in those cases when they came to trial so that the husband would have to prove his innocence rather than have his guilt proved against him because the situation was so bad.
But, Carol, you know the power of that tradition, and now here it is, you know, connected with modern technology, ultrasound and scanning right. before birth. That's a potent combo.
It is, and I think that dowries were, I think, even illegal in the province she was working in, and there was really not much that the government seemed to be able to do to prevent, to change that cultural imperative.
Yeah, Carol, I appreciate you're driving that point home again and your call. Let me get one more here from Boston. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, I'm actually from Armenia itself, and I have a little bit of more information as far as why the situation developing like that is more of an economic and social issue and lack of opportunities for a young man to have future in Armenia and have jobs and security. So it's a huge wave of migration going towards Russia. And the reason being that the lack of opportunity in Armenia itself.
But let me ask you, Mike, the why. I mean, Armenia is right behind China. China's 121 female births or male births per female. Armenia's 120. That's extremely high. So why sex selection? Why does economic trouble lead to gender selection there?
Well, the country itself, Tom, is very small right now. Population is increasingly going down, and you have a migration going towards Russia because the opportunities are really, really. I mean, I was there. Last August, and businesses are very slow, and a lot of the young people just go permanently to Russia and get married there. And so what we have is a lot of young women in Armenia that have grown up, and there's no chance for them to get married. So, you know, the new generation will get married, they look at the neighbors and say, well, these girls are all in the house, they don't get married, they have no chance to get married. I don't want to have a girl and so she stays home. You know, I want to just have a boy so he can have a family, you know.
And pretty soon it happens on a scale that affects the whole ratio of gender in the country. Mike, I appreciate that on Armenia. Let me go to Dina here. Dina, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. I was born in Russia, and what a lot of people here don't know is that after the Second World War, for several decades, Russia had a very similar experience in reverse, where there were many more women than men, and it had huge societal implications. So, for example, it was quite common for women to stay unmarried and to share somebody else's husband, and basically be like a second wife, a mistress, but with children, and it would be considered a family. And the society would close their eyes on the behavior and would not consider it immoral because they understood that she had no choice. Or men who would previously be unmarried, considered unmarriageable, such as hopeless drunkards or sick or old, would now become marriageable so that you wouldn't never have a widower or a divorced man staying single. He'd be grabbed quickly.
Right.
So there were all kinds of, and of course, women ended up going into men's jobs more as a result.
And this is because there were more women than men, you're saying, in Russia.
Way more. I mean, as a result of the Second World War, half of the men between 18 and maybe 50 was wiped out.
Yeah.
It was really a serious problem, huge demographic problem. And looking at that problem and seeing how it affects society may be helpful for people who are now trying to study Asia, where something similar maybe will be happening in reverse.
So what does that experience leave you anticipating here, Dina? Do you think this balance is out in the end?
I think morals will change so that people will be closing their eyes more when a man basically is sharing somebody else's woman instead of having their own. That's what happened in Russia. And also, ideas of what man is considered marriageable, or in this case, woman, will change. Probably dowries will end up coming down eventually. I think that will have to happen because instead of actually devaluing women, I think this experience will do the opposite. It will suddenly, women who were considered too ugly or stupid or something to marry all of a sudden will become attractive candidates.
Dina, I'm really grateful for your call. Mara, what do you say to that that experience and Dina's speculation about what may happen socially, let's say, in China?
Well, that's a very astute point, Dina, because actually these networks where men are buying wives from other countries, they cropped up in part because countries like Russia and Vietnam had surpluses of females. For Vietnam, it was the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer the case in Vietnam because
right.
But Chinese men are going to Russia as well to find women. But the idea that a woman's... that women's value increases as they become scarce. That's been put forth again and again by economists.
Mm-hmm.
It's true maybe only in the areas where the sex ratio at birth is skewed. So women who are born into those communities, it's true that they might have a little bit more bargaining power. But it ultimately, there are also women from poor areas who are then at risk of being kidnapped, of being bought. And they don't control their value. They're being sold by their parents. So their price has gone up. And Dina, you're right that actually dowry is decreasing in some parts of Northwest India because of this imbalance. But still, women are at risk of being kidnapped. So in that regard, it's really a setback for women.
What do you expect over time, Mara? It's such a vivid picture that you paint here. Self-correcting? As economies develop, or, you know, is there a risk of this becoming a permanent feature of some countries?
Well, demographers don't expect the gender imbalance to be around forever. But even if the sex ratio at birth balances out tomorrow, we'll still have this generation of men, of extra men, and we'll see effects from that. There could be some unexpected effects. I mean, one thing that Christoph Gilmoto has speculated about is that there will be more demand for domestic roles. So there will be fewer housewives, fewer mothers, maybe more pressure on women to take on those traditional roles and not become scientists or politicians. So definitely huge effects on society.
Mara Vistendahl, her new book is Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men. Mara, it's unsettling but absolutely fascinating, and we really appreciate how well you've laid it out here. Thank you so much for being with us today from New York.
Thank you, Tom.
Go out with I Spent My Life Waiting for Love, music from India, where the birth ratio is 112 males to every 100 females at birth. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.